Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, we're going to explore something I think many of us have faced.
Oh, for sure.
You're in a season of life that feels less like a hurdle you can just jump over and more like a an endless dark tunnel.
Right, where you're just looking for some kind of meaning in the face of all that difficulty.
Exactly. So this deep dive is for you, if that's where you find yourself. We're going to look at the mindset you need when the hardship just doesn't seem to stop. How do you anchor yourself?
And we're pulling this directly from the notes of an author who is really wrestling with this, trying to build a framework for understanding extreme suffering.
A framework based on what, exactly?
It's centered on this idea of a sovereign God, one who has control, who has a specific, you know, a measurable purpose, even in those awful long periods of human pain.
So that's our mission. We're going to try and extract the facts, the intellectual anchors that these texts provide. How can a person stay stable on the inside when everything on the outside is just shaking? Mm. And to start, we have to look at the immediate response that the material recommends. And it's pretty counterintuitive.
It really is. What's fascinating is that the sources, they don't promise a quick fix. There's no escape the tunnel button.
No magic wand.
None at all. They acknowledge the difficulty, but they immediately shift the focus inward. The core instruction comes from 1 Thessalonians.
Chapter 5.
Right, chapter 5, where it says, "Be joyful always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus."
That is just... it's a radical thing to ask of someone. When you are really hurting, the absolute last thing you feel like doing is being joyful.
Or giving thanks.
Or giving thanks. So how do the sources justify that?
Well, it's not because the situation itself is good. It's because the instruction creates an internal state, a posture that recognizes God's ultimate control over the situation.
Ah, so it's about internal stability, not external reality.
Exactly. It's a pathway to that stability that works no matter what chaos is going on outside. Mm-hmm. It's choosing to activate this, you know, this mental and spiritual posture of trust. You almost have to do that before you can even start to see any purpose in the pain.
Okay, so if that trust is the first step, let's get into the evidence, the justification for it. We jump right into the Gospel of John, chapter 9.
Yes. Jesus has just left the temple, and he sees a man who is born blind.
And this scene is so critical.
It really is. Because it shows the default human response to suffering perfectly. The disciples, they immediately jump to the oldest assumption in the book.
Which is?
Suffering is punishment. So they ask him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?"
They're asking who's to blame. I mean, isn't that our first question? Always. We want to trace the pain back to some kind of failure.
Always. We want a cause. But this is where Jesus just flips the whole script.
He changes the entire conversation.
He does. He completely shifts the frame away from sin, away from judgment, and puts it squarely on purpose. His answer is, well, it's pivotal. He says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned."
But this happens so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Let's just pause on that. The works of God. We really need to unpack what works means here according to the source material in the original language.
Right. So the word that gets translated as works comes from this Greek term, and it means more than just a task or a job. It signifies an act or an action that carries out or completes an inner desire, an intention, a purpose.
So it's not just busy work. It's the execution of a deep pre-existing intent.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so if we plug that definition back into the story of the blind man, his suffering, his lifelong disability, that wasn't the point. It wasn't the goal.
No.
It was the necessary mechanism, the canvas, you could say, through which God would fulfill some specific inner desire. The blindness was the precondition for a divine unveiling.
Precisely. The situation wasn't a punishment. It was the raw material for an act of divine expression. And this is why, in this framework, the pain is absolutely real, but the circumstance is never random. It's a means to an end.
That idea, that transition from purpose as action, the works, it leads us perfectly into the second core idea, which is purpose as an outcome.
An outcome defined as glory.
Exactly. So let's go to John chapter 11. This is the story where Jesus gets the news that his close friend Lazarus is gravely ill.
And this story gives us an even more explicit key to understanding all this. Jesus gets the news, and he doesn't rush off to save him.
No, he doesn't. Instead, he makes this incredible declaration.
He says, "This illness will not end in death.
Oh.
It is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it."
Which is such a bold thing to say, especially because Lazarus does die before Jesus even gets there.
He does.
So if purpose is the works in the blind man's story, what does glory mean here? What is that as a divine outcome?
The term glory.
Mm.
It just carries so much weight. It means dignity, honor, praise, worship. It's that which draws forth a good opinion of something or someone.
Okay.
So Jesus is essentially saying that this entire agonizing situation, the sickness, the waiting, the actual death, the intense grief of his family, all of it will ultimately serve to display God's dignity and honor.
In a way that what makes people see God differently?
In a way that elevates the perception of who God is.
Mm-hmm.
It makes his identity visible and absolutely undeniable.
It's all about the contrast then. You take the lowest possible point, death and total despair.
The absolute lowest.
And you use that to highlight the highest possible point, which is divine power and honor.
Yes, it's an exercise in extreme contrast. If the whole point is to reveal God's power over death, well, then the situation has to involve death. It's the only way.
Okay, so we've established this divine framework. Purpose shows up through works, and the end result, the outcome, is glory. But we have to talk about the tension here. The source material doesn't shy away from this at all.
No, it doesn't.
The immediate searing pain of these situations was 100% real.
We cannot ignore that. The suffering of the blind man, that was his whole life up to that point. The death of Lazarus was real, and the crushing grief of his sisters, Martha and Mary, I mean, it was undeniably, horribly real.
So when we talk about this purpose, we're not trying to, erase the pain?
Not at all. We're talking about overriding the finality of that pain.
And this is the hardest part, I think, for anyone listening who is in their own challenge right now. It's holding those two things at once. The reality of your current agonizing pain and simultaneously trying to believe in some eventual transcendental purpose that you just can't see yet.
It's incredibly difficult. And that's why the source material looks at figures who endured for a long, long time.
Like Joseph.
Think of Joseph. Years in a pit, then sold into slavery, then unjustly thrown in prison. He spent something like 20 years in circumstances that look completely random and unfair.
Or Job.
Or Job, whose suffering was so extreme he begged to die. For him, it wasn't just losing things. It was a total collapse of meaning. Nothing made sense anymore.
So what's the lesson we're supposed to draw from these long, drawn-out stories?
That the suffering lasted for years, but the meaning didn't show up until much, much later. Joseph was only able to look back years later and tell his brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good."
To save many lives.
Right. And Job, after everything, he gained this new, deeper understanding of God that he described as, seeing with his own eyes. The purpose in their lives only became clear after the whole thing was over. It was all retrospective.
So the suffering wasn't just a waiting period. It was the long, necessary process of shaping the person for that eventual purpose.
That's it. The central idea across all these stories is that in each life, God was fulfilling a divine purpose that ultimately glorified his name. And this is critical. That purpose was almost totally hidden from the person while they were in the middle of it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's make it actionable. If the purpose is only clear in hindsight, what does that mean for you, the listener, who is suffering right now?
Mm.
What good is knowing the end of the movie will be great if you're stuck in the absolute hardest part of the film? What are the anchors you can hold on to right now?
That is the crucial question. You can't just fast forward to the end credits. So the sources summarize four critical certainties that are meant to act as immediate anchors. They're based on God's character, not on your circumstance.
Let's list them out. What are they?
First, he is completely aware of everything happening in your life. Your smallest pain is not unseen. Second, nothing can separate you from his love. That's an assurance of security no matter what happens.
Okay, that's two.
Third, he feels your pain. He is not some distant, passive observer. And fourth, he is sovereign over every stage of your life and has a specific divine purpose for you, regardless of how meaningless it all seems right now.
That gives you a foundation, some security, but it doesn't necessarily give you that intellectual meaning you're so desperate for in the moment.
No, it doesn't.
And the notes seem to suggest that finding that sense, that meaning, it doesn't usually come from logically figuring out the how or the why of the hardship.
Right. Because you can't logically dismantle a situation that's operating on a transcendental plane. Our human minds are wired to solve problems and get rid of pain. So when the pain stays, we just assume it's a failure or it's random.
So what's the final step?
The final step suggested by this framework is finding sense by choosing to draw near. to trust the God who is the source of all comfort, peace, wisdom, and joy.
So you have to accept that your own logic has hit a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you choose to orient yourself toward the source of goodness, even when that goodness seems totally hidden by your circumstances. You're rooting yourself in the identity of the source, not the temporary nature of the tunnel.
It's the ultimate act of faith. Finding meaning means you have to choose to go beyond your initial feelings, beyond your human logic. You choose to anchor yourself in the certainty of a guaranteed purpose, even when that purpose is totally obscured by fog and pain.
That's a really compelling thought to end on. If we can only see the purpose by looking back, if the glory only shows up after the struggle, then the ultimate act of faith is believing the end credits are already written.
Yes.
Even when you were still in the darkest, most difficult scenes of the movie.
Precisely. Trusting in Jesus in the middle of a situation that just defies all human explanation. That's described as the choice that ultimately makes the most sense. Because it's the only choice that lets you access that higher transcendental perspective.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We really hope this framework provides a solid anchor for whatever tunnel you might be navigating right now.